This session's love and discipline, and I wanted to tie those together. We've talked a little bit about love and just a little bit about discipline so far, but I think it's important for us in our minds to see those as connected, and that those are closely related things. When you think about love, it's just like, well, everything we do is out of love. Everything we do for our kids, we educate our kids because we love them, we discipline them because we love them, we have a vision for them because we love them, we train them because we love them. So we're building into our kids because we love them so much. And I think it's really important that we see love as being the key and not discipline. I think it's easy just because I think discipline can make such a difference that it's easy to kind of lock into that. Like, I feel like if there's a misbehaving kid and I got to watch him for 2 weeks, I could really make a difference in that kid's life. Could really change a child, or at least temporarily, by just having some structure and discipline just in a couple of weeks. But it's not that that's the answer to everything. And I really feel like love is more important in our home. And so I want to start with that, just that love is the key, not discipline. And so we must communicate belonging, love, and pride in our children. In Matthew 3:17, a voice from heaven said, "This is my son whom I love. With him I'm well pleased." So we see some different things going on here. This is my son. He belongs to me. He's mine. Whom I love. I love him. And I'm pleased with him. And I think our kids need to sense all three of those. That we're special to them because we love them and we like them or we're proud of them. And they're ours. There's something special in them. I remember one time we had a family in our church that had a teenage son who was going through a pretty hard time. Dad was a really great guy who I respect a lot, but he wasn't doing a fantastic job handling all of that. And so the teenage son had a bit of a teenage tantrum, and I think he like tipped over a bookshelf or something in the home, and maybe they called the cops. I can't remember where. It's been a long time, but it was a pretty ugly scene, and they called me up and said, "Hey, can you come and talk to us?" And so I came and talked to the parents and said, "Hey, can I talk to your son a little bit?" And I talked to him, and I don't even remember where we went, but we were outside sitting on a curb somewhere, and I'm like, "Hey, so do you know your dad loves you?" And he's like, "Yeah, I know." I'm like, "Okay, well, why do you say it that way? Like, what's the deal?" He's like, "Well, because he has to love me." I'm like, "What do you mean?" "Well, because I'm his son, and so I know the Bible tells him he has to love me." And so you could just sense there's this, yeah, he loves me, but it doesn't count. He loves me, but he doesn't like me. I'm like, okay, I can see that. I think that's that pride thing. He didn't sense that his dad liked him, that his dad was proud of him, which, from the dad's point of view, you can appreciate. It's like, maybe you just tipped over furniture in my house. Like, you're not super pleasant right now to be around. But I think just generally in life, I think the kid kind of felt that way. Like, I'm a failure. I'm an outcast. My family doesn't like me. And that's tough. Our kids want that sense of love and belonging. There's a video that was popular years ago. It's Team Hoyt, and you may have seen this before, but this dad would run triathlons with his son, and his son was handicapped, and so he would bike with him in a special seat and run with him with some kind of little wheelchair, and then I think on the swimming part, the dad would swim pulling a little raft behind him with his son on it. And they would go around and do all these different competitions, and there's one that I really like where they're coming into the finish line, you know, the crowd's just roaring because they're really excited, and the kid's like pumping his fist like, "We did it!" And it's kind of cool because it's like, well, you didn't really do anything. We're kind of along for the ride. But you could just see this sense of the dad. I think that's the belonging part. It's like, why does this dad love this kid? Well, he's not athletic and he's not, he doesn't have any achievements or attractive or academics or whatever. You know, it's not like the kid has done something to earn favor. But just, you could tell this dad's like, "But you're mine. You're mine." And I think that's really important. I think that's really a basis of why we love our kids. And do you want to do the, if God lined up all the little kids?
Okay. So when we were raising our kids, this was one of the things that we would do just to communicate. We were just trying to work on these things, communicating love and belonging. But we would say, God lined up all the little kids, let's say we were talking to our 8-year-old little boy. We'd be like, if God lined up all the little 8-year-old boys in the world, there would be tall ones and short ones and fat ones and skinny ones and good smelling ones and stinky ones. And we would kind of go through all of these words. And then we would say, but at the end of the line, there would be this stinky little, grubby little 8-year-old boy. And the Lord would say, you could have any of them. Which one do you want? And we would say, we would take that one. That's the one that we want. And the Lord would say, are you sure? And we'd be like, yep, that's the one we want. And so we would do this with the kids. We actually talked about making a book about this and even passing it on to our grandkids. But if God lined up all the kids in the world and just telling your kids, I would choose you. I would choose you. You're the one I would choose, this little girl or this little boy. And I think our kids just grew up with that story. They'd be like, oh, I know. You'd pick the fat little, grubby little. And then they changed it on me, and they said, Mom, if God lined up all the moms in the world, there'd be beautiful ones, and there'd be tall ones and skinny ones and fat ones and skinny ones and tall ones and short ones, and there would be grubby ones, and at the very end of the line, there would be this grubby little, chubby little. And God would say, which mom do you want? And I would choose that one. I would choose that one. So I think the kids just turned it back on us.
So just anything you can do to communicate love to your kids is super critical. And I think, obviously, you want to say the words, I love you. I don't mean make sure they hear those words once in their life. We say those words daily, probably multiple times a day. I love you. Love you. Every time we see them, walk past them, you know, hey, love you. Or, you know, you hug them, you tickle them, you chase them, you wrestle with them. As a soda drinker, I would have my cold soda all the time walking through the house and sizzle them on the back of the neck and punch them on the shoulder. You know, just any communication of, hey, I see you, I notice you. And just even training them, they'd get up in the morning and come down and, like, just ignore you. It's like, hey, you know, hey, good morning, how you doing? And, you know, training them to be interactive with us and not just be stuck in their own little world. So we communicate love in all kinds of different ways. And one of the ways we communicate love is just by disciplining them. Our training, our education, everything again is tied to love, but discipline's an important part of loving our kids. Proverbs 13:24 says, if you refuse to discipline your children, it proves you don't love them. If you love your children, you'll be prompt to discipline them. Well, what's that mean? I love my kids? Well, we all love our kids. But what it's saying there is sometimes we think by withholding discipline, we're being more loving. If I withhold discipline, oh, that's loving. And God's saying, no. If you love your kids, you'll discipline them. Because you love them, you want to do what's good for them, and discipline's good for them. It's good to be trained. It's good to be disciplined. I like this picture. It's a pretty simple idea, but just if there's a fork in the road, and like let's say going to the right is kind of the it's glowing, kind of the glory of God, kind of like, woo, you know, you go that way, okay, that's good, that's the good path. And if on the bad path, you know that there are terrible things, lions and tigers and bears and traps and cliffs and, you know, it's just really going to be rough. Well, the deal is you can't force your kids which way to go. You really can't. Not in the long run, not really much in the short run. You can't make them obey. But what you can do is you can make one path really good and one path really hard. And so you make the good path really positive. You coach them and say, hey, you know, you should go this way. You should make this choice. This is the way we're going to do it. This is a good path. This is a path of life and blessing and good. This other path, this is a bad path. This is a path of death, being separated from God. This is a path of brokenness. And then you do everything you can to put up little barriers and a barbed wire fence, and you're going to block them off of that path as much as you can. They can go around it. They can jump over it. They can figure out a way to get through it. But you're going to make it challenging, and that's discipline. So to me, that's discipline in a nutshell. You're just making one path easier and one path harder. So that's what we're trying to do. Loving parents discipline their kids. Loving parents discipline their kids because it brings order, hope, and peace to the home. Proverbs 19:18 says, correct your children while there's still hope. Do not let them destroy themselves. Proverbs 29:17, discipline your son, and he will give you peace. He will bring delight to your soul. And just as we talked about creating an awesome atmosphere in one of the previous sessions, you know, discipline is a great way of achieving that. I remember I was talking to a dad one time, and he had some troubled kids, and I shared this verse with him, and he was like, he's like, like, kind of like this, his laughter was just so wild, because it was like a, that's so cool, and it's too good to be true. Like, there's no way that's going to happen, but oh, that'd be so wonderful if it did. And it was just really hard that he tried for a long time to turn the corner with his kids, and just he and his wife weren't very united. So anyway, it was challenging. It was challenging. But the idea that you can have a peaceful home that's so good, it brings delight to your soul instead of wearing down your soul, I think that's super encouraging. So there's a lot of hope in discipline. Hebrews 12:11 says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful later on. However, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. And it's amazing how discipline can help a home. We don't have to be overrun by our kids. And there's a radical difference between a home where there's loving discipline and training going on and a home where the kids run the roost. And so it's a blessing to bring discipline into the home. In this first part, I'm not even talking physical punishment or corporal punishment. Just discipline in general is a very life-giving thing to our homes. Our Heavenly Father models loving discipline. Proverbs 3:11 says, my son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, and do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves. As a father, the son he delights in. What son? The son he delights in. The son he loves. Not just the one that he's fed up with, that he's frustrated with, that he's at his wit's end with. This is the son he delights in. Because he loves him, he disciplines him. See how closely it's connected to love. This next passage, the blue part, is the quote from this Proverbs 3:11. And so here in the New Testament, it's going to bring up this same quote from Proverbs. It says, and have you forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as sons? My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline. Do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. For what son's not disciplined by his father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. And so God is a God who loves us, and he's a God who disciplines us because we're his sons. That's part of that whole encouragement there, right? We're his children. So he loves us, and he disciplines us because he cares about us. Even in Revelation, we see the same idea. Those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline, so be earnest and repent. He disciplines us because he loves us. Love paves the way for the acceptance of discipline. Hebrews 12:5, the passage we just read, said that God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. It's good for us to be disciplined. But I think love paves the way for us to be able to receive that discipline. I like the beginning of one of these passages where it says, no discipline is pleasant at the time. I think it's the same one in Hebrews. Discipline's not pleasant, right? I don't enjoy it. My kids don't enjoy it. My mom doesn't enjoy it. People listening don't enjoy it. My other kids don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy it as a grandparent watching it with my grandkids. It's just like, just let them have fun. You know, it's not enjoyable, but it's good. It's good. It brings good in people's lives. And that's why it's such a good life-giving thing. I had a friend who used to say, rules without relationship leads to rebellion. And you know, I think love, when our kids know that we love them, that paves the way for them to accept it. So if you can imagine being corrected, which we all hate being corrected, we don't like discipline, if it's by somebody who loves us, that at least helps a little bit, right? I remember one time I got reproved by this guy because the place where I worked, I drove from one company to the other, and I was down this long stretch, and the speed limit must have changed, and I just had it on cruise or something. And we pulled into the parking lot, and he was fuming mad. He's like, do you always drive that slow? I'm like, I kind of go five over like everybody else. And he's like, well, you were going this and this. And he just kind of laid into me. It bothered me all day long. I'm like, who is this guy? And I didn't have any relationship with him. I didn't know him. I saw him at lunch, and it's like, you know, I'm trying to hide from him. And just because relationship's so important. But if somebody cared about me, if someone was my friend, I'm like, hey, man, did you notice the speed limit change back there? And it would still hurt a little bit, but it wouldn't, like, bug me all day long. And I think when we really love somebody, or when we sense love from somebody, it allows us to accept discipline. So we can think of sports and coaches. You know, if coaches are for us, they can get us to do anything, and they can train us, and they can make us do these hard things, but we know that they're for us. If our parents, we know that they love us, they're for us. Or if a teacher corrects us, but we know that they love us, it really paves the way for us to be corrected if we know that they love us. Loving discipline exchanges a controlled amount of pain now for an unknown amount of pain later. And again, I'm not talking about physical punishment. We'll talk about that in a minute. But just all discipline is painful. Proverbs 15:10 says, stern discipline awaits him who leaves the path. He who hates correction will die. And we can't protect our kids from all pain. Life is hard. We've been through hard things, right? All of us. You lose jobs, miscarriages, you lose kids, you have kids with handicapped issues, you have stuff with your elderly grandparents and parents, and I mean, life is hard. Sometimes we tell our kids, life is hard, but you can make it harder. And that's really true. And so with discipline, what we're trying to do is not have them make their own life harder. And so you can't save them from a lot of the hardships in life, but you might be able to help them not end up in prison. You might be able to help them be able to have relationships with people so they don't go through broken relationships or divorce. Or you might be able to help them to have deep friendships and to stay on a path of blessing instead of a path of a cursed path. So basically, we want to correct our kids now in hopes that it makes a difference later on, that it spares them some of the pain of life, that they're not making their lives harder. We need to encourage and reward good behavior, discourage and correct bad behavior. If you think of the two paths again, it's just really super simple concept, but this is so hard to do in real life, right? It's challenging. I think of one time I saw a parent, actually it was a grandparent, I was visiting someone from out of town and visiting her kids, I guess. After church, the grandkid kind of came up to grandma and was like, And grandma's like, oh, honey, and picks him up. I'm like, wow, you just trained him. Like, you just trained him that, hey, next time I want to get picked up, I know that if I go and fuss, I'll get picked up. And that's so easy to do. But it's not good training. It's not helpful. When we enforce bad behavior, then it just keeps getting repeated. Well, sometimes we would go out to eat as a family. When you see a family of 10, you know, the whole bunch of little kids, it kind of stands out. And so people would come up to us oftentimes in the restaurant, be like, oh, your family's so nice, and your kids are so well-behaved. And that was a great opportunity for us. We'd get home and be like, hey guys, did you hear what that person said? Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. And they said that they were really impressed with your behavior. You guys did a great job. And that's probably the harder thing to do, is to remember to praise our kids. Like, man, you're doing great. You're doing awesome. And one of the things that I think is really challenging is as kids get a little bit older, kind of preteen and teen, I find, for me at least, that I'm still correcting them a lot, like coaching them, like, hey, you should have done it this way. Just to stop sometimes and say, hey, I know I correct you a lot, but I want you to know that I think you're doing really well, and I'm proud of you, and you are exceptional, and you are just a cut above the rest. And, you know, I'm so proud of you. I keep coaching you because I really want the best for your life, but I want you to know I think you're doing well. I think that's super important, and it's something I did a lot, and I probably should have done even more than I did. So some keys to successful discipline. One is just that it needs to be consistent. If every single time you sped, you got a ticket in the mail, well, it would change your driving habits, right? That consistency is something that's like, okay, I need to take this seriously. If something's inconsistent, then it's not as serious. So like with driving, you know, you get a ticket, whatever, once every 10 years or something. It's like, okay, whatever, no big deal. And so it just doesn't have much of a punch to it because we don't think it's going to happen. You know, next time I do this same thing, I might get away with it. I might be fine. And so consistency is really important if we want our discipline to work. It needs to be immediate. It doesn't have to be immediate, but it needs to be quickly because I think we are very short-sighted people. And so long-term consequences don't mean as much to us. And I remember when I used to work as an Oracle developer, we had a couple different buildings that we'd have to go between sometimes. This is in Colorado. And I remember one time it was snowing, and there was a bald guy walking between the buildings with an umbrella. And I thought, that's fascinating, because nobody else uses an umbrella when it's snowing. But for him, the snow landed on his bald head, and it immediately melted, and he felt it, and it was cold and wet. And for most people, it landed on their head, and it didn't get really cold and wet until like 5 minutes later after it melted. And nobody else cared because it was kind of long-term consequences. And those long-term consequences just don't mean very much to us. And so sometimes as parents, you know, we might give our kids some kind of a discipline. Like they say, hey, you know, because you didn't finish your food, then you can't have any ice cream tonight. And then they say, oh, well, I can eat ice cream if I want. Okay, now you can't have any ice cream tomorrow night either. Oh, yeah, well, and then pretty soon it's like they can't have ice cream for the next 68 days. And to them, completely meaningless, right? Because it's like, I can barely understand tonight, let alone 68 days from now. And there's just something about our minds just don't do as well with that than if we have some kind of immediate consequence. So like little kids getting out of bed, if you catch them 20 minutes later and you say, hey, get back in bed, it's not real obvious to them. But if you sit outside their door and you wait until their foot touches the ground and you say, hey, and then they pull their foot back up and they're, oh, I know I'm not supposed to do that. And it becomes really clear to them, okay, well, this is the thing. As soon as I get out of bed, I get corrected, just vocally. I get corrected, and I know that I shouldn't do that. And so that bringing it more immediate is helpful. It needs to be memorable or painful would be another word for that. Again, I'm not talking about physical discipline yet. Hebrews 12:11, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful for everybody. And so that's how discipline works, is it has to be painful, has to be memorable, or it doesn't really mean anything to us. If we go back to driving again, if you get a ticket you go 20 miles an hour over the speed limit and you get a ticket for $5, like, okay, that was totally worth it, you know. but you get a ticket, and then it's been a while since I've gotten one, but it's always like, okay, oh, that's going to be $120. And then I get the bill, it's like $380. It's like, what? Are you kidding me? And that's painful, right? And that painful part is important in the process to get us to stop doing something. We used to have a church that met in a school, and a couple of times I got called by the principal, and I got called into his office. And even, you know, I was probably 40 years old at the time, but it's still like, oh, man, that's painful to go to the principal's office, find out what you did wrong. Well, some kids scratched their initials into the floor, and they just rebuffed it, and it's like, oh, man. And just that act of being called in was a painful thing. So that's just part of discipline, is it has to be painful. So even your older kids, when you correct them in some way, we've done things like, hey, I want you to write a paper on three verses that talk about loving people and how you can apply those with your sibling. And that's painful, right? Well, I don't want to write a paper, and I got to find verses, and I got, you know, and so it's making it challenging. Or there could be a discipline like, okay, I want you to go out and work in the yard for an hour. Oh, you know what? I came out and you weren't working. You need to do it for another hour. And so it's not being mean. It's not trying to heap on stuff. It's just like, I want this to be painful enough that you think, I don't want to do that again. I don't want to face these consequences again. And that helps them grow, just like painful discipline helps us in our lives when we don't do something that we're supposed to do. So big picture, if discipline's not working, I would look at these three things. It needs to be consistent, immediate, and memorable. If it's not working, one of those is missing. Think of the hot stove, a stove that's on, and you touch it consistently. Every single time, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt immediately, and that hurt is pain. And just really simply, we don't do things that every single time they immediately bring us pain. We don't. You won't do it. Your kids won't do it. Your pets won't do it. I mean, this is not rocket science. Nobody wants to do things that immediately bring them pain. Any kind of pain. Physical, emotional, whatever. Relational. And so, for discipline to work, it needs to be those three things, in my humble opinion. So, kids always bump up against the boundaries, but if you discipline them effectively, their behaviors will correspond closely to the boundaries you've set. I really like that video that my son made of our granddaughters, and how quickly they figured out, oh, Dad's busy. We're not supposed to touch this, but look, I can touch it. He's not doing anything. And then the other one's like, really? Well, I'm going to touch it too. And I'm going to touch it again. And they just keep going and touching, 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 even though they completely knew that they weren't supposed to do that. And that's just the way kids are. But as we think about discipline, I want you to think, man, if I kind of crack down in this area, oh, I'm going to be disciplining all the time. The reality is discipline works, and it changes behavior, and it changes hearts. And so it's not that you're cracking down all the time. You're just cracking down at a different place. And so if you feel like you've been a little bit loose with discipline, that means you've drawn the line in a place. Your kids are bumping up against that place, and that's where you're disciplining. So if you want to hold a higher bar, a higher standard, it's not like you're going to have way more discipline in your home. The kids are always going to bump up against the rules. It's like in El Paso, as we go through the city, the interstate speed limit is 60, so everybody goes 70. Well, later on in Texas, the speed limit's 80, which is awesome. Woo, I can go 80. So do people go 80? Because it's like, well, okay, well, that's reasonable. I mean, 60 is crazy. 80, okay, yeah, I'll do that. Well, no, of course not. Then they go 90. You know, so it doesn't matter where the boundary is. People are going to bump up against that boundary no matter where it is. And so don't think, oh, if I try to be more structured and have more discipline and correction in my home, things are going to go crazy. They won't. Our kids will bump up against whatever boundary we have. Okay, so everything we've talked about to this point is just generic discipline, any kind of discipline. But now I want to talk about corporal punishment, physical punishment, and spankings. And I understand that this is a hard topic because of things that the world says about spanking. Maybe because of your own experience. Maybe you've seen abusive situations. And so, by all means, I can appreciate if this is a sensitive topic. You know, I just want to remind you, you don't have to do everything we do. This may not even be for you, depending on your situation. But I want to encourage you to just hear me out, listen to these verses, and then figure out, okay, what's God want me to do? What's God want me to do? And I would really want you to feel peaceful in following God in this, if this is the way that you would agree that God says we should do things. So I would say the clearest discipline method the Bible talks about with our children is spanking. I think there are only maybe 12 or 15 verses in the whole Bible where it directly gives parents input on parenting, gives parenting advice to parents specifically related to their parenting. So of those, most of them deal with discipline. And here are four of the passages. So Proverbs 13:24, he who spares the rod hates his son. He who loves him is careful to discipline him. 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Proverbs 23:13, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he will not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. Proverbs 29:15, the rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother. So I would say the rod is an obvious use of physical punishment. Physical discipline. I use the word spanking because I think that's the word that most clearly communicates physical, loving physical discipline in our society. So some authors will say, oh, the word is chastisement. It's like, I don't even know that word. I don't know what that means. So I use the word spanking because I think that's probably a pretty good interpretation of that. So let me explain what I mean by spanking. I would say it's something that's done out of love. Right? It's not out of anger, being fed up, being at the end of yourself. It's something that's controlled. Again, because it's not, I've reached the boiling point, but I'm doing this. It's a very controlled thing. Something that's on the bum bum, stays on the bum bum. It's good and fatty and muscular, and you're not going to hurt anything if you stay there. It's done in private, and it stings. It's painful, but it's not damaging. So the obvious question there would be, well, is spanking abuse? Well, I hate abuse. I think people who abuse their kids should be in prison, absolutely, positively. And I have never hit my kids, never, not once, any of them. But I've spanked my kids many, 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 many times because it's something that's completely different than abuse. I don't know the laws in your state, but I think in Texas and Colorado, where I've lived, the laws were such that if you're not kind of leaving, if you're not bringing a wound, you're not bringing a physical mark, that they don't consider it abuse. Of course, our society is changing so quickly, that could change. I don't know what the laws are in your two states here. I did this conference with some people from Nepal a few months ago, and I looked it up. It's like, oh, this is illegal in Nepal. It's like, okay, well, you know, what do we do with that? It's like, well, here, I want to cover this topic, I'm going to cover these verses, and you guys need to kind of figure out your convictions, what you're going to do in your situation. And so I think for each of us, that's always kind of a healthy thing. So there's a story that I heard one time that really marked me. It's from Charlie's brother, John. John was my pastor for many years, and kind of a regional director after that of our group of churches. And John was giving a sermon similar to this one, talking about discipline and raising kids. And he said something similar to this. He said, every night, I take my son up, and I pull down his pants, and I lay him on the bed, and I hurt him on the bottom. And just like you, I was a little shocked by that. Like, what? What do you mean? What is wrong with you? What do you mean every night? Like whether he needs it or not? And why do you have to pull down his pants? That's weird. And why do you use the word hurt? And he had this pregnant pause. It just took forever. Like, what in the world? He said, my son is diabetic, and I'm giving insulin a shot on the bottom. And I was like, oh. Okay, I get it. You're not being a jerk. You love your kid. You're trying to help him. You're trying to save his life. And you're not hurting him on the bottom for the sake of hurting him on the bottom. You're giving him insulin. You have to give him an injection, and that hurts. But the fruit of that is so good. And man, I was kind of judgy there, wasn't I? Like, why did I so quickly, like, just think you must be, like, evil? Like, what in the world is going on in my head? And And it was just such a powerful thing for me. It just was like, boom, I get it. I get it. Spanking is good because it brings a greater good. Because it helps the kid. And then he shared other examples like, you know, if you cut somebody with a knife, is that good or is that bad? Well, it depends. If you're in a gang fight or are you a surgeon? If you go to the dentist, you know, drilling on someone's tooth, is that good or is that bad? Pretty sure that's usually bad, but there are things. So you bring pain into people's lives. You know, coaches bring pain into people's lives. Why? For a greater good. And so when I think about it, is it abuse? That motive there is huge. Are we doing this to be mean and teach them a lesson? Or are we doing this in a controlled, loving, helpful way? So I think of my kids, just even times where there's one time we were gone at a conference, and so some of the older kids were watching some of the younger kids, and one of them acted up, and we're like, you know, hey, you could spank if you want. We didn't usually have the older kids spank the younger, but you could spank if you want, or you could give them this. I think they had to write a verse out 5 times or something. And the kid is like, they had to write the verse out. I would have rather had a spanking, you know. And, well, that's kind of interesting, just thinking about abuse. You know, was that abusive? No, they thought that was way better than having to write a verse out 5 times. I remember one time Kathleen disciplined one of the kids, and she came up later, and she's like, Mommy, thank you for spanking me today. I needed that. And so, I don't know. I can appreciate if you've seen abusive situations or heard them, but I would say what happens in our home, what happened in our home is nothing at all like that. Spanking works because pain tells us to stop. This isn't in Scripture. This is just kind of wisdom. Pain tells us to stop. So about 10 days ago, I went fossil hunting with a random guy I found on Facebook who looked a little like an axe murderer. That was the biggest fight Kathleen and I had had for about 10 years or so. But eventually, I was able to go. I brought a bodyguard with me, but he truly knew where some cool fossils were when we found some fossils. And as I'm fossil hunting, there's this little tiny hill and kind of this little slope. And I do mountain running and stuff all the time. And so I'm wise enough to be like, I should not go down that. That's not safe. There's no good footing there. But I'm coming in a hurry. I want to find some fossils. And so I went down the slope. I knew I shouldn't have. And of course, I slipped. And I kind of landed on my side and hurt my foot. And it was no big deal. So we fossil hunted. Drove home, and I'm like, God, I'm a little sore. It's kind of weird. And then I thought I could reach down into the fridge and grab something out of the bottom of the fridge. And my side said, no, you may not do that. I'm like, whoa, man. Wow, that hurt. Then I was in my office, and I had just kind of a normal little office chair, and it has the armrest here. And I reached down to get something, and I thought I could reach down and get something off the floor. And my side said, no, you may not do that. I'm like, oh, I'm kind of sore. And that pain is telling me, stop. Stop doing what you're doing. And then the next night, I'm in bed, and I thought I could roll over. And my side said, no, you absolutely may not roll over. And I heard this popping noise and felt it. It's like, oh, I don't know what that was. That was not good. And so anyway, I thought that I could avoid going to the ER. But my side said, nope, you need to go. Yeah, I'm just kidding. That was actually my wife that said that. And so, so it turned out I have a couple cracked ribs, and that's why I'm breathing heavy sometimes. I also thought that I could speak a lot without breathing kind of irritates it. So as I speak, I breathe a lot. It's like, oh, this hurts. So it's not painful, just it makes me act funny and rub my side as I talk. But that's how pain works, right? That's why we don't step on a twisted ankle. Pain says, nope, don't do that. That's why you don't try to catch a porcupine, right? Pain says, nope, don't do that. Danger, right? That's just how pain works. So it's not from Scripture. It just seems like this is the purpose of pain. The purpose of pain in your life is to tell you to stop doing things, at least physical pain. Let's talk about the benefits of spanking. So first off, just spanking is loving. Proverbs 13:24. It says, he who spares the rod hates his son. He who loves him is careful to discipline. We've talked about that a little bit already. Spanking is safe. Proverbs 23:13, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he will not die. Punish him with a rod and save his soul from death. The Bible doesn't actually say spank on the bottom, but that might connect well to this verse. That's a very safe place to spank because it is so muscular and fatty. And I think it's safe, like the insulin, that it's a life-saving thing. And then I think it's a way of dealing with sin before we get angry. So it's even safe in that because there's not always this escalation of I'm getting more and more and more and more frustrated. It's like, oh, you did something wrong. You need to be disciplined. We'll do that and we're done with that. And there's really no need to get frustrated. Spanking is effective. This is pretty wild, this set of verses here. Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from it. So it drives out folly. In the context of Proverbs, that seems like that would be a pretty cool thing. Spanking saves their souls from death. Proverbs 23:13, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he will not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. Wow. What's that mean? Save his soul from death. I don't even really know. But that sounds really good. I mean, if I could save my kid's soul from death, I would want to do that, whatever that is. I think it's probably that path thing. You're helping them go down a path of life instead of a path of death. It's what a good thing. It imparts wisdom. So it drives out folly. It imparts wisdom. The rod of correction imparts wisdom. That's awesome. It keeps you from being disgraced by the behavior of your children, so they're not bringing shame onto you or your family. Proverbs 29:15, the rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother, and it changes the heart. Physical punishment cleanses away evil. Such discipline purifies the heart. So it doesn't just stop a behavior, like, oh, okay, well, now I got them to quit drawing on the dog, or now I got them to eat their peas. That's not the goal. The goal is to change their life, to change their heart, and that's what we're shooting for. So loving, it's safe, it's effective, drives out folly, it saves their soul from death, it imparts wisdom, it keeps us from being disgraced, shamed by them, and it changes their heart. And so is discipline, is spanking the only form of discipline that's any good? No, there are other things. Do I know if they do all these things? Yeah, I don't know. And so to me, it's like, wow, what a blessing, what a good thing that this loving, effective form of discipline exists and is life-giving, and it's so good for my kids. So I remember one time hearing a kind of a famous actress slash Christian author, and she had a book on alternative forms of discipline. I thought, oh, that'd be kind of interesting. Yeah, I wonder. And then I kind of thought, alternatives to what? Alternatives to what? Alternatives to spanking. Alternatives to what God said to do. Like, wow. And I'm not saying that all those are bad. I'm just saying, man, this is the one that God brought up. This is the one he talks about. And, well, let's take this pretty seriously and not just figure out ways around it. Maybe it's actually a good thing. Maybe it's actually helpful, even though society says it's not. Do not withhold spankings or use them as a last resort. Proverbs 23:13. We're hitting some of these same verses several times and just focusing on different aspects of them. Proverbs 23:13, do not withhold discipline from a child. And in context, it's talking about spanking there. Do not withhold. Do not withhold. So what's that mean? Well, it seems like when they need a spanking, you need to give them a spanking. You don't want to withhold. Proverbs 13:24 in the NIV says, he who spares the rod hates his son. He who loves him is careful or diligent or prompt to discipline him. Looking at some other words there in the NAS and New King James. Same verse in the Amplified. He who spares the rod of discipline hates his son. He who loves him disciplines diligently and punishes early. And so we're kind of looking at, okay, well, do they hear? Do they understand? Are they capable of obeying? Okay, then they need to be disciplined. And, you know, a huge amount of people in America believe in disciplines. You know, 70 to 90, it's probably like 98% of people believe that it's okay to use physical discipline at times. But it's very different than what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking of it as like a form of regular discipline and training our kids. And most people think when they really do something bad, then we're going to discipline them. Then we're going to spank them. I gave a sermon similar to this one time. talk at church, and someone came up after me, and she said, "Do you want to hear when my brothers got their first spankings?" I'm like, "Yeah, that sounds like a good story." And she says, "When they robbed a gun store." And I thought, you know, you don't want to stereotype people, but I thought, and what kind of people own a gun store? I'm guessing gun owners. Like, man, if you're going to rob a store, like Dairy Queen or something, like, what are they thinking? And mom must have been like, "I can't believe my kids did it." And so they get their first spanking. It's like, okay, well, yeah, that's good. They probably needed a spanking then. That was good. But maybe if you had spanked them before that, you could have avoided the whole gun store robbery thing and all the implications of that. But I think that's how most people think. Okay, in some extreme situation, then yeah, that's probably good. It's like, it is. But it might be a good thing sooner than that to avoid some of those extreme situations. All right, let's fly through some of the rest of this. So how do you spank? Again, I'm not even going to have verses connected to most of these. Just some tips of how we do things, and you might do things very differently. But do things privately. So we would take them to the bathroom or bedroom or something. Explain the offense. Hey, buddy. Here's what you did, you know, you called your sister this name or whatever. And then we administer the discipline. We used a rod. We'll come back to that. We tested repentance with a simple command. For us, there were some different things we would do. One thing, if someone was in a situation that they were doing the wrong thing, we would put them back in the situation. So, like, maybe a little kid, "Hey, don't touch the outlet." Well, afterwards, we'd set him, not like right against it, but close in that area. Like, okay, no touch. Remind him. And then they have that chance to make that choice. If they're repentant, then they'll do the right thing. We would also do some really simple commands, like, okay, look into my eyes. So after they got a spanking, look into my eyes. You know, they like look at my forehead or my ear, and I think they think you can't tell. It's like, oh, I can tell. And for me, that was just a thing, because it's hard to judge the heart, but I can judge the obedience. Oh, you didn't obey, honey. That's going to be another spanking. And so we would test repentance, and if they weren't repentant, then we'd repeat as necessary. And you might be really uncomfortable with that. To be honest with you, I have heard stories that I'm very uncomfortable with of how many times somebody spanked their kid or how long it went on, and I'm just like, I wouldn't do that. And that's just me and how I'm parenting my kids. And so I can appreciate if my standard's different than yours, and there are standards that I see that I don't like, and we've just really... In wisdom, we got to follow God the best that we can. And then once discipline's over, it's over. And that's one of the things I love about it. It's just, you do it. In a sense, it's like, it's just, we just do it. It's a thing that needs to be done. And then we just move on. Everybody's forgiven. And we're back to happy and back to playing. And I don't want to say it's no big deal, because it is kind of serious. But it's not like the kid goes around moping all the time after that. It's just done. It's done and over. 2 Corinthians 2:6 says, "The punishment inflicted on him by the majority is sufficient for him," talking about adults. "Now instead you ought to forgive and comfort him so that he will not be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow." And I like that spanking kind of leaves you in that spot where, hey, it's done, it's over, and we don't need to be caught up in sorrow anymore. And I love this verse in Psalms. "His anger lasts only a moment, but his favor lasts a lifetime. Weeping may remain for a night, but rejoicing comes in the morning." And I want to just get back into that spot of, hey, you're completely... 100% back in my favor. And just a couple more discretionary thoughts, baby phase. Obviously, you don't spank a newborn. And so we don't have, you know, God doesn't give us instruction on some of that. So we have to use wisdom. So one thing I would think is they need to be able to understand the instruction and be capable of following the instruction before you would ever start using a rod type of thing. Something we did, again, I don't have any verse, and maybe this isn't the best idea. We just did little hand swats, because a lot of like little kids, they start with like touching plants and outlets and things, and you just say, no, no, and you just give a little swat. Usually the kids would kind of laugh, like, ha, 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 what are you doing? And you give a little swat, and after about the fourth time, they're like, hey, I don't like that. And they sense that, okay, you're doing something unpleasant to me. It's not terribly painful. But again, I don't have a verse for that, just something we did. We only spanked until maybe age 11 or so. If, obviously, at 13, 14, if a kid robbed a gun store, I would still spank them. But generally, we're pretty much done with most of the kids by 11. swats. Again, doesn't say in Scripture. We probably did 5 to 7. And then the instrument, a rod. Some people will say, well, a rod is flexible like a willow tree thing or a little dowel or something. We usually use a little plastic or wooden spoon. It's convenient. I don't know why. The physics of it, it seemed like it was a little easier to aim with the head part. And so we never accidentally kind of would go on the back or the upper legs or something. And so that's what we did. And I think the point there is probably not exactly what you're using, but the point is that the kids are disciplined. So why didn't we use the hand? It's really pretty simple. I know using a rod, that term totally sounds abusive. But the goal is to create pain, right? To create a sting. And if you slap yourself on the leg, how hard do you have to do that before you get a sting? That didn't sting. That hurt my hand, but not my leg. About that hard. That was a sting. Don't do that. That'd be my input. Don't do that to your kids. That's hard. But man, if you had a little wooden spoon, you went, you'd be like, oh man, that stings. And so I think it's less harsh to use an instrument that stings a little bit than to use your hand. You're swatting on their backside and their whole back's moving. And it's like, man, just a little, if you took a little piece of dowel and hit your leg, it's like, oh, that stings. So that's why. And then some people say, well, you want the hand to be the instrument of love. And that's why you use it. And to me, it's just, I don't know, just in Scripture, it just says rod. And so I'm just, it's not like, oh, you know, well, since then we invented the hand. Turns out that's way more convenient. So that's why we do the rod, is just because that's simpler. So anyway, that's it. So I'm flexible, so we want to eat and then come back at some point for questions and answers. Okay, back in here at 1:15, and we'll be around if you want to chat at all too.